Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Greinick, your host. Delighted to have you with us. We're very pleased to have Representative David Holstom, District 72, in studio. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Well, okay, yeah, it was a hard decision, but yeah, we said, okay, let him come in. State Representative David Holstom was elected to the Georgia House of Representatives in 2022 and serves the citizens of House District 72, which includes portions of Carroll, Heard, Troop counties. He's a fifth-generation farmer, and we're going to prove that in just a minute, from Carrollton, and currently resides on his family farm in Rootville, where he and his son, Andrew, operate their cow-calf operation, chicken houses, hay fields, and beehives. His greatest accomplishment is working alongside his son and passing down the knowledge, expertise, and drive it takes to be a farmer. As a state legislator, he is interested in legislation that would encourage small businesses and local economies, modernize law enforcement equipment, training, and techniques, as well as securing resources for local school districts in District 72. Furthermore, he seeks to support rural communities through legislation that would promote farming, agriculture, and enhancement initiatives such as broadband. David retired after 36 years with Carroll EMC, who provides a lot of our power for a lot of our transmitters. He's also a member of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, president of the Carroll County Young Farmers Association.
Past president.
He's also past president of the Heard County Cattlemen's Association and serves as a member of, and served as a member of four surrounding chapters. Currently, however, he is vice president of the Georgia Cattlemen's Association.
Correct.
That's a big deal. You know John Calloway.
Very well.
Yeah.
Very well.
We had him on the program about 2 years ago. John and I go way back.
He just recently got inducted into the
Hall
of Fame. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. David works with the UGA Extension Offices covering six counties, 10 area FFAs, pilot, and 4-H programs. Okay, the committees he's on: Georgia House Agriculture and Consumer Affairs Committee, Georgia House Interstate Corporation Committee, Georgia House Rural Natural Resources and Environment Committee. And as I said, you're a fifth-generation farmer, and we're going to prove that because you've been up all night with 120,000 chickens. Is that right?
That's right. Been up all night selling on the poultry side, selling out off the farm. So it's an all-night affair. So, yep, been very busy.
120,000 chickens.
Yep, four houses, 30,000 per house. Correct.
30,000 per house.
Correct.
Are they pretty noisy?
Not too bad. Like I said, it's a good opportunity for the farm to generate income. But like you said, it allows you other farming opportunities. So it ties very good hand in hand with cattle and the poultry, and along with the hay. So it utilizes all the resources that we have in the commodity. So it works out well.
Anyway, after the program, I need to talk to you about some chicken fertilizer. I'm in desperate need. All right. Well, the Georgia legislature, is out of session, and the people of Georgia are safe once again. So anyway, 217 bills and resolutions passed, and I want to go over some of the legislation that was of interest to you. What is this, your second term?
No, it's my first term, second session. So I was in session 23
okay.
in 2024.
First term,
I just finished
session.
I'm finishing up my first term.
So
correct.
For lack of a better way of describing it, you're getting your sea legs.
I am. It's been very, very informative, very educational, doing the due diligence to learn the process of, but the biggest thing is creating the relationships and the contacts. I'd like to clarify, last time I was on the Community Voice, I think back in January, you had asked a question about, well, I'm sure, do you have a staff? And my answer was it was myself and my phone. So I got to thinking about that, and basically the creating those relationships and contacts, it is my phone, but it's the contacts in my phone. Because a lot of times for myself being up there, you know, there may be something of interest, like say, you know, that's coming to the floor or whatever. And I've always made mention that, you know, a lot of people think once you become a legislator, you become an expert on everything, and I'm far from that. But what I can do is utilize those contacts to reach out to find the information needed, how it will impact our district. So basically, the folks in my phone become my staff that I can call at any time, and it's been very great within the relationships we've created. So I just wanted to clarify that.
I think we all tend to think somebody in government is, you know, is automatically an expert. That's not
I learn something every day, and I know I will continue learning to do a good job for the folks here at home.
Well, back on, by the way, former, or assumed to be, I guess, former or current state representative Jay Collins, the best of the best. This is his comment from Jay. He's posted on our Facebook Live. The best of the best, Representative David Huddleston.
Well, I tell a lot of folks, and I always want to give that opportunity, you know, knew Jay prior to going and being a legislator. We got to know Jay a whole lot more at the legislative level, and how that come to be was basically when we went in, we was one of the largest freshman class. And I think one of the great things that they did within our leadership was create a mentor program. And because, like I said, once we get up there as a new freshman, is to learn the ropes. And basically, Jay was appointed to be my mentor. And it was great at days, like I said, just coming. He would just show up and just say, hey, how's everything going? Got any questions? And it's like I said, just he'd look across the room, just give me the thumbs up. So, yeah, Jay was, you know, very, very much appreciated, and think the world of him. I'm going to miss him.
Well, we interviewed him when he was only a lowly mayor, and then when he was a freshman legislator, so we helped raise him too. Anyway, okay, well, back to the sea legs comment. You've got three pieces of legislation that you kind of personally had a little hand in. So let's start and go over those. And one of them's kind of a real fun one.
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, you know, getting the sea legs under, you start learning the process, start getting more involved, hands-on. And I actually, prior to session, I guess back last fall, had some local leadership, but then also some family members would like to, you know, do a road dedication. So basically the road dedication that we looked upon to doing was recognizing Keith Jackson from Rootville. You know, everybody knew that he was the well-known sports announcer, but a lot of folks didn't know that, you know, hometown Rootville, between Rootville and Tice. And so we're looking at, you know, me learning the process through transportation committee of a road dedication. So we're looking, it'd be this fall sometime, once the governor signs HR 854, I was able to put in legislation to recognize the Highway 527 interchange down at Rootville, and it'll be the Keith Jackson Memorial Interchange. And basically, he's been well known of saying Woolnelly, so it'll be the Keith Jackson Memorial Interchange, Woolnelly.
It's going to have Woolnelly on the sign?
It is.
Oh, boy.
So a lot of folks is, you know, excited about it. But basically, I think within my three pieces of legislation, you know, I said I always like creating a theme of sharing. And I said within my three pieces, I said there was excitement, frustration, and disappointment, and I share into my, you know, pieces of legislation. But then the road dedication bill come, I learned who the first one to turn that piece of legislation in gets to be the carrier of the bill. So basically, I guess I was within 2 or 3 days of session getting it turned in. So I had the honor of carrying 854, and with that, transportation attaches other pieces of dedication legislation to it. And so there was 18 other pieces attached to it. So I get to, you know, got to go through the committees and share it and get it out of rules. But the biggest thing is just the honor of carrying that piece of legislation, recognizing so many great individuals around the state. So,
you know, those signs, like I was just thinking, we're only just a few hundred feet away from the Wayne Shackford interchange,
yep,
27, the bypass.
Yep.
Wayne was an ag agent in Harrelson, I think in Gwinnett, too.
Yep. Somebody actually had mentioned that with 166 was Wayne Shackford. Yep.
Yeah.
We were talking about that just a few
months
ago. So
the sign's up there. I drive by. I got to interview him. He was head of the DOT for a number of years.
I believe that's, where it was mentioned he was head of DOT for.
My uncle interviewed him in the 60s in Gwinnett at WLAW, by the way.
Okay.
So that's cool. So
The other piece was kind of my, I guess, was talking about frustration was 1099. Basically, it was a title. I had some landowners reach out. Actually some pecan growers and talking about the purple paint law. And basically what that is a lot of times you see on property to where people identify their property lines with no trespassing signs. This just gives another avenue of marking property with purple paint marks. Basically there's 22 states already has this language within their title code. So spoke with DNR and all, and basically what we looked at doing was putting the language in Title Code 16 of signs and or purple paint to give the warning, but actually, like I said, if it was criminally trespassed, they would be considered a misdemeanor, 12 months or 1,000.
Aren't some property owners kind of already voluntarily going to purple paint?
Well, they may be voluntarily going, but it's not recognized, in the state. So like I said, basically all southeastern states has purple paint within that title code. So anyway, actually in 17, it was introduced on the Senate side. So I actually went back to the author on the Senate side and we spoke about it and said I've had some interest from landowners to possibly do. So we actually brought it back to life and we carried it in from the House side. Had to go through non-civil judiciary and that was a very, very learning process of going through that through a judiciary committee. Of the questions being asked and learning, having support within the crowd to speak upon the bill. And I guess getting it through the House side, getting it all, voted in on crossover day, was exciting and all. But then I got it over to the Senate side. Like I said, the transportation bill on Senate side is pretty much – it's like a given. It's an honor. So it's going to move on.
So it's in the Senate committee?
I had it in the Senate committee, went before the Judiciary Senate committee, and was not able to get it out of the committee.
It's still in the Judiciary Committee?
No, sir. This is the second year biennial, so it pretty much
it's gone.
I didn't bring it for a vote because, like I said, I felt that if I'd brought it for a vote, it might be harder to bring back. So I actually, the chairman gave me the request of either bring it to a vote or actually working on the language. So I said, let's work on the language. Mm-hmm. So I actually met with one of the senators that had a number of the questions, and hopefully we can meet with him over the summer and maybe come to some negotiation and bring it. Because like I said, it was very supported in the ag, through Farm Bureau, through the cattlemen's, through Ag Business Council, through the forestry. And basically what happens is a lot of times with these signs, they're very expensive. People, take them down, destroy them, that type thing. But it's a lot harder to remove the purple paint. And it gave the criteria of how you can install it. So maybe that, and I've heard a lot of people talk about bills that, it takes them 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years to get out. So this allows me to still learn in the process of meeting with that, some of the Senate side and working on the language. And we'll back up and try again another day.
Okay, you've got another one, 1274, that you have been of interest to.
Yeah, 1274 was a lot of work. I call it my vet bill. And how that generated was basically I was down in Perry Fairgrounds, basically. And
shout out to Perry, by the way.
Perry, Georgia, that's right. So down there at the Fairgrounds. And I made a comment that we're in dire need of large animal food industry vets in the state. There's a lot of veterinarians, but we're in dire need of large animal food industry vets. And you hear our Commissioner of Ag, Tyler Harper, he talks about food security as national security. So basically, our agricultural chairman, Robert Dickey, kind of put me in charge of saying, hey, let's see what we can do to figure this out. So I started working with the Georgia Veterinary Medical Association. And basically, there is a program that is offered to incentivize large animal food industry vets. Basically, it's a veterinary tuition assistance program, but how that comes to be, it was a one-year program, it was $20,000 for the application of that year, so you had to reapply each year. So basically, we tried to enhance this program of making it a three-year program, go to $25,000, serving less than 10 years practice, you could be eligible and to apply for the program. Well, within that, basically, it looked at counties that you could represent was within population of 30,000 and below. So we increased it to the counties of 50,000 below because of population growth and that type of thing around the state. That would be 118 counties in the state. So that means, basically, you could be a vet here in Carroll County, but let's say Heard, Meriwether, something, those counties doesn't have that large animal food industry vet. So if you're willing to serve in those counties from your practice, so you could reside here locally, serve in those counties, basically 20 hours per week dedicated toward large animal food industry vet, basically to incentivize, because like I said, we're in dire need of that. I was able to get it out of the house. It cruised. The support was amazing from around the state. It was in higher education. Got it out of the house on crossover day. I actually had three come out on crossover day, and I actually chose 1274, the vet bill, to be my first bill ever to be able to be presented. You know, you kind of always remember that first one. Got it on the Senate side, come out of the Senate side, House higher ed, great. Got it into rules. It was more toward the end of session. So you get thinking there's more and more pieces of legislation that comes to the Senate rules. Got it out of rules on the last day. It was on the floor, but it never got called up for a vote. So basically, pretty much hasn't, you know, died on the table.
Well, why is there a dire need for large animal vets?
Basically, you get to thinking, you mentioned earlier, talking about within the cattle industry, we don't have large animal food industry vets to assist me as a farmer.
Why not?
I think basically a lot of the individuals, and it comes down to dollars, basically you got small animal practices that for the income that's produced, generated in small animal, it's harder to make that income on the large animal.
Generally, we take the small animal to the vet, but in this case, the vet has to go to the large animal.
Correct. And that's why I said in those 108, well, all counties, 159 counties of Georgia, but it's just willingly to serve in those, one of those, you know, in those 118, right, that vet has to come out to the farm. So a lot of times within that conversation, me being a cattle farmer, you help your families and your friends and your neighbors. And the week I made that comment, I mean, I had other assisting cattle farmers call me like three times that week, need some kind of assistance. And part of it is we just help one another because we don't have that large animal food industry vet. So
but
hopefully we can generate the incentivization and get more and more established.
Okay, our guest this morning is David Holson, state rep from District 72. We'll be back with more with David after these words.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at tanner.org.
The Customized Academic Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is individually designed to provide students with a personalized, clearly defined academic track that earns the student a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically driven students to pursue a focused, rigorous course of study personalized to their wants and desires. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. Thank you for listening. We got a comment from Leslie Smith McPherson. Thank you for your service at the Capitol, Representative Huddleston, Mayor Villarica, and we'll try to address that topic later on if we have time. But first, there are other issues that we wanted to go over that you're familiar with. Certificate of Need, with, you know, this program being sponsored by Tanner Health System, that's a interesting topic, and a certificate of need permits hospitals their expansion, etc. So House Bill 1339.
Yeah, pretty much House Bill 1339, like I said, you know, within CON, certificate of need is, you know, I don't know of in depth and detail of it, but I know that it's something that's looked at quite often. And I think it's like you said within Tanner, how I kind of see it is gives them the assurance, and like you said, within the certificate of need of providing services to the public. And somehow, some way, somebody put one to me was that, you know, a lot of times, basically, establishment may come in, and let's say this is the question, you know, are you willing to serve the public? And a lot of times it may be an 8-to-5 service to where, like I said, your local hospital's 24/7. You know, so basically within this 1339, but Chairman Parrish looked at it, and I think, like, a lot of times legislation is looked at that, you know, maybe it may, I guess, be for part of Georgia, but it may not be all of Georgia. So because it's so different around the state. So basically, like I said, within Carroll County, Atlanta, things like that, you may have to look at it in different. But in rural parts of Georgia, we're in need of establishments, hospitals, beds, things like that. So I think within this 1339, it addressed some of that. So it would actually allow those establishments, you know, in the rural communities of Georgia, but then also work along with the urban setting. So like I said, and a lot of times, it goes back there. Within Tanner, there's some individuals that I've reached out to, and like I said, they've been great assistance in helping me to understand it even more. So,
a topic that's gained a little traction over the last couple of years, and this is reflected in House Bill 420, is the foreign ownership of farmland, and particularly by countries that would be considered adversaries of the U.S. Where are we in that legislation?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much, it's 420 on Senate bill, because I know that Representative Perkle is doing one on the House side, but I think, like I said, the 420 made traction. Basically, what it's doing is looking at acquisition of farmland. A lot of times you hear folks talk about preservation of farmland, and we hear that all across the country of foreign entities of purchasing farmland, and you wonder why. And then a lot of times it basically they're purchasing this farmland near military bases. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of concern there and a lot of interest. So basically it you know, can get into the details a little long, but basically, you know, if you're a resident, you know, within, I think in the last 6 months of the 12 and that type thing, but if you choose to leave, you know, basically you need to be a resident of Georgia to be able to say have ownership within that. So it just gives protection of the preservation of farmland to the landowner. And it goes back to the statement I made earlier, the Commissioner of Ag is food security, is national security. So
Tyler Harper. Yeah, we've had him on the program.
So, you know, so basically it just gives those parameters and protections to preserve that farmland and the citizens, you know, of Georgia.
One thing that seemingly is catching the attention of more people is homestead exemption. I think the number on that one's 1019. Can you give us a kind of a little insight into homestead exemption from the?
Yeah, basically, I've actually had some interest. You know, people locally just I think excited about it. But Representative Matt Rees brought this piece of legislation, and it creates a statewide homestead exemption forum certum ad valorem. And so basically what it does is to increase statewide homestead exemption from $2,000 to $4,000, provided that the owner resides in the home as their primary residence. So I think any time that you can save, you know, your taxpayers and your citizens' dollars, I think they're very, very appreciative of it. But like I said, it went well.
About 10 years ago, thereabouts, we started getting more and more emphasis on waterways, creeks, et cetera, et cetera. Understand there's legislation 1554 for navigable waterways.
Yeah, I was going to say basically comes down to private property owner rights, that type thing. And I think, you know, the key phrase is in the navigability of the waterways. So, you know, a lot of times you've got to define that and what does it mean. I think I think it was something that was, you know, maybe in 1860, something like that. Basically, a lot of these river waterways for commercial trade. So nowadays, like you said, it gets more and more private property owner rights, you know, with hunting, fishing, canoeing, kayaking, that type of thing. And so basically they've created a study committee, you know, probably travel around the state, have some, you know, meetings, meeting with landowners, you know, establishments, and then that way they can come back this coming legislative session and try to define that and put something into place to you know, to protect and represent everyone.
We've got to take another break. Time is moving on, and we'll be back with more words from Representative David Huddleston after our words, these words from our sponsors, Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The World Language Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined, curriculum-based track to acquire essential knowledge and skills for success in biliteracy fields of study. The successful completion of this journey provides colleges with a method to recognize a rigorous foreign language immersion experience for all students at Oak Mountain Academy. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
All right, welcome back to Community Voice. So we have David Holston. He's a state rep from District 72. We're talking about a lot of different pieces of legislation on this former past session, and we're going to run out of time, so we've got two more that we want to hit. You being a 36 years of Carroll EMC, this is an appropriate topic, utility workers. 1033, just additional protection for utility workers.
Yeah, Chairman Lopp, Rob Leverett brought this forth, working along with Georgia EMC, Utility Workers Protection Act. Basically, like I said, what this states is 1033 is the Utility Worker Protection Act, which adds enhanced penalties for protection of utility workers' harm while acting within the scope of their employment or while performing official duties. And it gives the explanations and the parameters and the penalties for that. And basically, you get to thinking a lot of times, you know, within these utilities, a lot of these utilities are on people's properties. You know, and so, like I said, I mean, with understanding and easements and that type of thing, I mean, like within storm situations, basically you got to, you know, you have to go on people's properties. Well, you know, nowadays, I think with inflation, you know, bills being paid, a lot of times there's tensions to be had, you know, just having a frustrating day. You know, so basically, like I said, it's just giving them the support, knowing that they're protected and hopefully deter any you know, crimes committed. But I'll give you a quick example, and they used it. Chairman Leverett come to me and ask. Back in my earlier days of EMC, we did collections of power bills. So you may go out and do collections, so you know that could enhance danger there. But then I was going to say, one time I actually went to a place on the very north end of our system, and like I said, every meter is designated to a location. And basically, I had found a meter that had been removed from another location, installed into a location without authorization. And the gentleman at the time met me at the front porch and advised me and asked me not to remove that meter, but actually had a weapon at the time. So I just go back and call, and they bring in the local sheriff and you know, our utility workers and remove it and take care of it. And back in the day, it's just, you know, ask, you know, basically not do it again, but now it creates those penalties for something like that occurring. So I actually got to actually experience that during my earlier days working at EMC. So I'm glad to be a part. You know, I think I was one of the signers on it, co-sponsors. Glad it come through.
So shout out to all our utility workers.
Shout out to all of them. I'm going to tell you, but it's just, like I said, for the 36 years I spent there, like I said, with all these storms and the reliability of service and that type of thing, I'm gonna give all these individuals credit, gentlemen and ladies, inside and out, because a lot of times when these storms do occur, it doesn't matter, you know, it could be, you know, gas, water, power, but my end from the power side, there was many days that we left our families and our homes to go provide services for our customers.
Our gratitude to State Representative David Holston for coming in this morning. He'll be back Friday week, and we're going to talk not about the state legislature, but about agriculture exclusively. So I'm looking forward to that. If people want to get in touch with you real quick, David, how should they go about it?
Like I said, basically my number is 404-535-1110, and my house email is david.huddleston@house.ga.gov.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to our sponsors. Go out and make it a great day. You're in tune to WLBB Carrollton.